Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda. It's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong.
And welcome to the Say What Show. It's October 19th, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Dolly Howard. And for some reason, somebody has put on...
I was finishing my sentence to Deborah.
Oh, okay. Dolly Howard, that's the voice you just heard. And we've got Dr. Deborah Green with us, who I think you're all going to be just tickled with, because she has been on 5G radio with us a couple of times, and I just found her fascinating. I would like to introduce her by reading a short biography. Deborah Green, PhD, is a frequently quoted expert in the field of energy medicine and mind-body integration. She combines the best of leading-edge approaches with modern science in her clinical practice, writings, lectures, and nationwide media appearances. She is the author of the acclaimed book, Endless Energy, The Essential Guide to Energy Health. Along with Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, J.K. Rowling, and other notable women, Deborah has a chapter in the award-winning book, Gotta Shift, Women Leading for a Change. She is the founder of Inner Clarity and the Energy Mastery Program. Having worked with thousands of clients and taught hundreds of workshops, Deborah is known for her ability to get to the core of psychoenergetic imbalances and facilitate lasting improvement. Welcome, 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 Deborah.
Aloha. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yes, yeah, she's in Hawaii. 6 hours difference.
This is true.
So what were you girls talking about? You want to continue, Dolly?
No. I guess that was unanimous.
So glad I asked.
Yeah, naughty.
Oh, my God, you too. Oh. Okay. All right. That's okay. I put up your promo from your website, Deborah, and energy is everything. You know, it blasts you from the front page. And I am just kind of wanting you to give us a feeling of what it is when you say that sentence, and, you know, maybe we can go through the different offerings that you talk about. I mean, I just want this to be us getting to know you. Is that, you feel comfortable with that?
Of course.
Okay, good.
I love getting to know me too.
it's our life work, isn't it?
Right? It is.
Yes.
Yes, so energy, yes. And sometimes what I say is energy isn't only everything, it is the only thing. It's all there is energy, right? And when we begin to perceive reality that way, and when we begin to perceive ourselves that way as energy beings, it can really have profound effects on how we live our lives. It gets us, you know, off of the physical plane and into the higher vibratory frequencies where, as far as I'm concerned, that's where the action is, you know? The physical plane is like an outpicturing of what's going on behind the scenes on these other dimensions, on these other levels, which is not just energy, by the way. It's energy that is intimately laced with information. And it really needs to be understood that way, as energy coupled with information. So it's not just a force, but it's also intelligent.
So you really, to be able to even get your head around it, you have to have a belief system that allows for you to see at the energetic level. Would that be true?
Not at all.
No? Good. Tell
nope,
me.
Nope. Not at all.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And
I was thinking like you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Meaning... Thinking like I do, meaning me or Nancy?
Deborah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thinking like, no, you don't have to be able to see these energies right. in order to know that they're there, in order to have this be your worldview. Not at all. One, because there's plenty of research to back up this reality. And so if you're more, you know, kind of intellectual and like to have that kind of, you know, scientific foundation, it's all there. The other thing is that there's lots and lots of life experiences that we've all had that validate this, in many different ways. And, you know, if we traverse the planet looking for approaches to health and healing and life for that matter, every single approach to health and healing and life in existence on the planet that we know of, every single one of them recognizes the primacy and fundamental importance of human energy, except for one, and that's conventional Western medicine. Conventional Western medicine is the anomaly. It is the kind of strange way of looking at things when we compare it to all of these other worldviews. And so when you think about that, it's like, okay, every single other, you know, culture, approach to life, to health, healing, whatever in existence recognizes energy, human energy, as being primary and fundamental. Could all of those people really be wrong? And what if they're not? What if they're right? Like, what if that really is the truth of our existence?
I gotta tell you a story. Okay. I'm writing a book. And I was talking about Raymond Rife, you know, Dr.
Yes.
Okay. And he had the, well, back in the 30s, he got the concept. He actually worked on it for 17 years. But he got the concept of using electromagnetic energy to kill cancer cells. So he was working with it. He was very well known in the field of medicine. I think it was optical medicine is what they were calling it.
Yes.
But he was so good at what he was doing that the people around him, you probably know more about the story than I do, but the people around him were pushing him to do actual, what do you call it? Like tests, you know, trials. Mm-hmm. So he went with the rats and he got really good results from them, and he was being heavily pushed to do human trials, even though he didn't think he had enough evidence. And, so he said, well, if you're going to do this, then you get the best in the world to overlook this trial, human trials. And in 16, well, he had 16 patients that were terminal cancer diagnosed, and in 100 days, they were all cancer free. Correct?
Well, there you have it.
You know?
And he did it all with frequencies.
With frequency, using vacuum tubes. I mean, you know, I was having a long discussion with Walt Silva about this, and he said he's into all this energy stuff, and he said he said if you looked at the thing that he was using, it was just like this amazing contraption that you wouldn't have even known what to identify it as. But he proved the case. Now, this is in the 30s, and so you can trace him up to that point where the human trials were amazing. And the thing of it was that he was only doing, I think I'm right to say that he was doing it once every other week, giving him the treatment for like 2 minutes.
I don't know the specifics of that.
Yeah, it was very, very short period of time. And the reason for that is he had determined that the lymphatic system, the cleaning system, had to clean out the dead cancer cells before you gave another treatment. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you could create a toxic environment within the body. So anyway, but, you know, the 30s and boom, all of a sudden you don't hear anything more about Rife and his amazing contraption. So let's flash forward to the 50s where we've got Wilhelm Reich, who was using orgone. He had identified orgone, which is like we know it as prana, chi. It's in every single, you know, concept of reality. They're talking about the force, that thing that nobody can seem to measure, but they all know it's there. But he was able to do a lot of things, including actually being able to photograph it. And also to determine that when metal would attract argon energy, and that it would then send it through the metal to the other end. So you had one side that was pulling in and one side that was sending out. And that organic material like cotton or wood would also attract argon, but would absorb it. It wouldn't pass it on. It would be like a battery. So he created these accumulator boxes that were designed to bathe a patient in a real intense field of argon with the healing energy. It's your basic, you know, it's the force, it's chi, it's prana, it's the basic energy force behind life. So he was told by the FDA to cease and desist, and he said no, and they put him in jail for 2 years, but he died a year later. But then the FDA spent the next decade trying to eradicate every single thing that William Reich had done with the word argon in it. It was like they were absolutely hell-bent to stop this information from getting out. So why? If it doesn't exist, why would you do this? Okay, now this is where my aha moment came in, because all of a sudden I started to stand back and look at what was happening at the time that these men were doing what they were doing. And unfortunately, it could have been any time, because they were all worried about war. In the case of, the 30s, we're talking just, they're getting into World War II. They're building for World War II. And in the 50s, you're in the Cold War and you're, you know, scared to death of everything. So I realized that Reif's name, Raymond Reif, his work was destroying biological cells with energy. Okay?
Destroying biological cells with energy? His work is matching frequencies,
yes,
to particular illnesses, you know, like diseased cells.
Right, right.
So I just want to make that specification. Yeah,
good. No,
that,
you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely.
I'm sorry. I'm very detail oriented. I should just say from the get go.
Well, actually, when I tell you what my next thing, you'll understand why I jumped there. You're absolutely correct. It's all based on resonance. It's based on the concept, yes, of energy, sympathetic resonance. So you put out a signal, and it's creating a vibration in a specific, very specific cell, that cell will kind of self-destruct. It just over-vibrates until it falls apart. And so you can be very specific to the cell, because every single thing has a frequency signature that's specific to it. So if you know what that is, you can create this, you know, vibration that just, you know, kind of pulls them apart. So am I correct there?
Okay. And it's very similar to homeopathy, which is another energy medicine, in that like treats like, you know. So if you find the energetic signature of an illness or a disease, and then you find that energetic signature and administer that, then whatever cells are vibrating at that disease or illness frequency, they end up, as you said, self-destructing.
Okay, so what I realized was that the reason that never went anywhere was because it was giving out an incredible secret about a weapon that could be used to energetically attack biological forms, i.e. human beings. So when Reif backed off from pursuing this, he was basically doing it because he had stumbled into a science that even today they're trying to keep from us. All right?
Yes, but I don't know if it's, I mean, yeah. I mean, my understanding is that the big threat was really to the American Medical Association, which is, you know, driven by Big Pharma, because, you know, if you're successfully treating all illness and disease, you know, with these frequencies, there's no money to be made from all of the, you know, medications and prescriptions and all that stuff, which is a huge player in this whole scheme that we're talking about.
I thought so too, until I stepped back and looked at it in the time frame we were talking, because the American Medical Association had only been set up 20 years before that. Pharmaceutically, there is no pharmaceuticals in the 30s. Mm-hmm. You know, so how could you convince people to give up on cures that will cure diseases? There's not enough pressure at that moment. Now, yes, I agree with that. But at that time, that didn't seem to be the thing that would have made people watch their friends and family die of something that they knew could be cured. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so then when I looked at it from that standpoint in the 30s, sure, they're all concerned this energy is gonna be, this information is gonna be let out. Not necessarily to the people, but to their enemies. Because mm-hmm. at the same time, you've got Tesla. Okay, again, same 1939, I think that this came out, but it had happened back in 1890s, I think. He was telling some reporters about a situation that had occurred where there was an earthquake in New York City, but it wasn't an earthquake. He had developed the ability to create a vibration that could take down buildings. Okay, and he was doing it. He said, it's really, you know, I wanted to slap him in the back of the head. He said, so I clicked up the power, you know, and I clicked it up again, and I clicked it up. All of a sudden, we start to hear a weird noise. I said to my workers, hey, what's happening? Oh, they didn't know. So I clicked it up again some more. And he said, all of a sudden, everything in the room started just flying around the room, and he took a hammer and smashed this thing. And this thing was virtually, you know, something you could put in your pocket.
Hmm.
Okay, now think of that. No wonder they buried Tesla, you know, information and everything. Because again, this is a huge weapon system. It took down the Twin Towers. That's exactly what took down the Twin Towers. So now you flash to Wilhelm Reich. And I'm writing this thing and I'm going like, Oregon? And I'm not making the connection. I go, could Oregon be weaponized? And so I Googled it, and don't you know, I found a whole book written on this thing, talking specifically of Wilhelm Reich's Cloudbuster, and how the Oregon that it is actually pulling in and directing can stop a nuclear missile, can actually stop a jet engine. It was like, I was just blown away. So again, that's why he was shut down. They haven't been shutting it down because they want to keep the power play of the American Medical Association and the pharmaceuticals. That's what we're being led to believe. It was all because they were weaponizing this stuff. They didn't want us to know what I've come to call enterology, the science of energy. It makes a different look at what we've been seeing for all this time. Are you with me? You disagree?
This is the first time I'm hearing this, so I'm just listening and taking it all in.
Well, it's something that I just feel like that answers so many questions. You know.
So, how do you feel about what she just said, Deborah? Can you share?
Oh, like I said, I'm just, you know, this is the first time that I'm hearing this. And so I'm just listening and taking it all in. It's interesting. It's fascinating. Yeah. These days, nothing would surprise me.
Well, because, you know, we look at the energy as healing, as beneficial, and it's confounding to us as to why the Western world would be keeping all these secrets.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it's just like you said, the vast majority. I remember when I was looking at reincarnation and I found out that the vast majority of the world believed in it. And as a Catholic, you'd go to hell if you believed in it.
Yep. Then there's a lot of evidence, you know, of reincarnation as well these days. You know, lots of research has been done on it, and it's, you know, becoming more and more accepted, which is great. I mean, I'm kind of a science head, I have to admit. So it's like, show me the evidence. And then once I am able to see it, it's like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I get it.
How did you get involved in this? You got a PhD. What's the PhD in?
My PhD is from Ohio State University, and I basically studied and did all of the coursework for a degree in communication, and I did all of the coursework for a PhD in somatics, but I only did one dissertation. And it's somatics, by the way. It's not semantics. A lot of people confuse the two. But somatics has to do with body-mind integration. And it's a very different field of study than semantics, which has to do with language. So, you know, in studying somatics and communication, I was basically looking at how the body-mind system communicates within itself and how we can communicate with it. But I was looking at it from a communication perspective, not from a pathological perspective, which means I wasn't looking at what's wrong, you know, or what's missing. And that sort of took me into the whole realm of subtle energies, the science of subtle energies. It just kind of went from there. My interest in you know, all things energy, energy medicine, energy psychology, energy kinesiology, just, you know, studying all of that, and kind of led me to start, you know, my own practice and develop my own modality, which is energy based. And I was trained in energy kinesiology, which is a, you know, it's a type of, it's a derivative of kinesiology muscle testing. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but
I am. But let's just run through it quickly, or not, for our audience, because it's an amazing modality.
Yeah. So applied kinesiology refers to using the body, which for me is always the body mind, right? Because you cannot separate them. I mean, that's one of the whole basis of somatics is, you know, a lot of times we think, well, the mind is in the head, and then we have the body, and the body is there to carry the head around. But it's not like that. You know, the mind is distributed throughout the whole body. And so that means that, you know, each one of our cells is like a conscious being in its own right. And they're organized around, you know, how we perceive and think and see and so forth, if that makes sense. But at any rate, to get back to your question about kinesiology, so it involves using the wisdom of the body, you know, that body intelligence, usually through an outstretched arm. If you're muscle testing, you know, someone else, you would ask them to hold their arm out, and then a little bit of light touch pressure is applied, at least in my case, because I do more what is called energy kinesiology. I don't do the really heavy-handed, you know, cranking on people's muscles like is sometimes done in chiropractics. So I use a very light touch, and that the feedback that you get from the touch of the outstretched arm is a binary code. When you apply a little bit of pressure to an outstretched arm, it will either produce what's called a switched on or strong indicator, or else it will switch off and produce a weak indicator where the arm, you know, will very easily kind of dip down. And that's a binary code. And that means that's a method of communicating, just like everything that you see on your computer is produced through a binary code. So when you have that binary code of strong, weak, yes, no, affirmative, negative, you can ask questions and you can get answers from the body-mind system. So for me, kinesiology muscle testing is it's a feedback mechanism that allows us to communicate with the body-mind system. And that's how I use it in my practice. But it has many applications. I mean, some people use it for testing, you know, supplements and herbs and nutritional things. Some people use it. It's used a lot in chiropractics. It's used for athletes. It's used sometimes to test for allergies, you know, food allergies and sensitivities and things like that. So there's a lot of different applications of this very sensitive, powerful feedback mechanism. And you know, when you watch somebody doing muscle testing, it looks so easy. It's like, well, anybody could do that. But I do recommend that if somebody wants to do it, that you please take a class and get trained in it, because there's really much more to it than meets the eye.
Would this same concept explain why pendulum works?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, you know, consider kinesiology muscle testing a dowsing method, like pendulum, or another form is using the rods, you know, like the dowsing rods that are used dowsing for water and so forth. So yeah, it's all kind of based on a similar concept. And it goes back to what you said earlier. It has to do with resonance. You know, if you're looking for water, if you're looking for, you know, something that a body-mind system resonates with or does not resonate with, you can do a lot of work that way, if you know what I mean.
So you've got the rods, and these are just bent little, like a coat hanger. You can bend it, and so you had it in your hands, and then it goes straight out, and you got two of them. And you, as the operator, you want to find out, is there water under this ground? So you put up the image of water, and because of the miraculous way everything works, you actually send out, you start a vibration of water, correct?
And then... If you're working with dowsing rods, and it's, you know, I mean, I think I've taken like one class on dowsing with Patrick McManaway. It was an excellent class, by the way, but just one class. And so I don't consider myself an expert with the dowsing rods at all. But, you know, to attempt to answer your question, what I remember from the class, which, by the way, was years ago, the first thing you need to do is you need to establish a communication with the dowsing rods. In other words, you need to know, okay, when the rods move, you know, straight ahead, parallel, what does that mean? And when they cross over and touch each other, what does that mean? You know, so you have to establish a communication with them. Like, you know, so if you're holding the rods loosely in your hands, two of them, one in each hand, and they're pointing straight out, usually that means, okay, it's whatever I'm looking for is not there. But then if the rods cross each other, you know, or touch each other, move in that way, then it means that, you know, what you're looking for is present, is there. And it could be water, it could be geopathic stress, you know, it could be, you know, any number of things, whatever you want to calibrate it to. And that is done usually with intention, you know. Human intention is an astoundingly powerful inner resource that all of us have, and most of us don't use hardly at all. It's a really massively untapped aspect of human potential, intention. And, you know, it is part of all of this work. Whether you want to get very specific with your intention or whether you want to be able to, you know, be neutral so that you're not influencing things with your intention. It's something, it's a force that has to be paid attention to.
I love that.
Dolly. And there's so much research now on the power of human intention. It's just fascinating. I mean, literally hundreds of rigorous research studies documenting the power and potency of human intention on a whole variety of things, you know, ranging from, you know, fruit flies to food and computers. You know, inanimate objects are affected by human intention. Dean Radin, who's the principal researcher at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, did this amazing piece of research on chocolate, infusing chocolate with intention. And sure enough, you know, the people who ate the intention-infused chocolate felt the effects of the specific intention. Those who did not eat that particular intention-infused chocolate did not experience the effects. And even our own DNA, there's been research done showing the effects of human intention to alter DNA. Water is another example. Like, water is very susceptible to human intention. Anyway, I love that whole body of research on intention. And it's just fascinating to me.
Could you define what you mean by intention?
Yes, intention is attention. So it's something that you focus your attention on, and then you infuse your attention with will. Intention involves will. So you're actually intending or, you know, willing for a particular outcome. And another body of research that's been done by William Tiller, not sure if you're familiar with his work, but oh my God, it's just amazing. Tiller actually proved that human intention can be embedded into a very small electronic device about the size of, you know, a deck of cards, and shipped across time and space to a different location, and then that intention can be discharged at that particular location. And he did this by influencing the pH of water, which, you know, for anybody who owns a swimming pool would know that you can't really change the pH of water that easily without using chemicals. Tiller used a group of trained meditators, because people who are longtime meditators have the power of intention. They have mastered the mind to the extent where when they focus their intention on something, it has much more power and potency than, say, the average person, because it takes mental focus. It takes mental discipline, to be able to potentize your intention. And so oftentimes in, you know, the research that's done on human intention, it's done with, you know, experienced longtime meditators because of that. The results are much better, in the research when it's done that way. And so Tiller took, and this research has been repeated a lot, but the research goes like this. Take a group of trained meditators, have them focus on this, you know, small electronic device that's about the size of a deck of cards, and they infuse that device with a specific intention. And in this case, it was to change the pH of water. And so they infused it with their intention, and then the devices were put in boxes and shipped to a lab that was several thousand miles away. And they were shipped along with other devices that were not infused with any intention at all. And they were, you know, those were the control devices, right? It's an experiment. So you have a control and then you have the variable. And so and they were all mixed up so that on the receiving end, nobody knew which device was which. And so then the devices were, you know, unpacked from their individual boxes, and they were each placed by vials of water. And sure enough, it was only the intention-infused devices that ended up altering the pH of the water where they were sitting. Isn't that cool?
That's stunning. I understand it totally. I would even accept it totally. But the fact that they've actually done it is stunning to me.
Yeah. And Tiller, you know, saw the potential of this and you know, talked about creating these types of devices that could be put, for example, people could use them in their homes. We could use them in hospitals, right? Because you could infuse the devices with healing intentions, you know, that perhaps are specific to certain diseases or illnesses or whatever. And so, you know, he really was not only a very grounded researcher, he was actually the chair of the materials science department at Stanford University for years. He had a decades-long career there. So very grounded in the physical world, published hundreds of research studies in the material sciences, but also, you know, doing this other research, particularly after he retired, and very visionary, you know, seeing the future of this as a massive healing potential.
Well, we actually, I sent you shungite, so you're at least familiar with it, yes?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So,
and I have to tell you a shungite story.
Okay.
Can I? Because one of the things that you sent me was this refrigerator magnet.
Yes.
And Nancy, I'm not kidding you. So here's the story. Like, my refrigerator, it bothers me because it's so loud and it seems to run all the time. I even was wondering if there's something wrong with it. There's not, but it's just a loud, you know, frequently running thing. So I to try to mitigate this, I bought some rubber pad feet thing for it because it's on, like, my kitchen floor is tile. And so I thought, well, if I can get rubber under the feet of the refrigerator, maybe it won't be so loud. You know, it won't make this horrible sound all the time. Maybe it'll stop rattling or whatever it's doing. And I've had it checked. There's nothing wrong with it. it's just, I don't like how it sounds and it just irritates me. So I put these rubber pad things under the feet of the refrigerator and it didn't really, you know, solve the problem. But when I put that shungite refrigerator magnet on, I am not kidding you. The refrigerator has calmed down considerably. It did not happen instantly, which I think is really interesting. But it was sort of like the refrigerator had to go through this process of adjusting itself somehow with the introduction of that shungite. And now it is so calm and quiet. I'm just so happy. Thank you.
Now, did you have a problem with the, you had to lower the temperature inside because it was getting too cold?
No, there's nothing wrong with the refrigerator. It functions.
No.
You mean after the shungite?
After the shungite magnet's put on a refrigerator, very often you have a drop in the cold.
Well, you know, I haven't really even paid attention to that. To be honest.
Well, most people realize it because their vegetables are freezing.
My vegetables are not freezing.
Okay.
But hey, I live in Maui and it's been like unusually hot here. But no, the veggies are fine. But I have noticed this quietness. I have noticed how the refrigerator has calmed down. It's not so noisy and it's not so, Yeah, the sound is much lower, and it doesn't bother me like it used to.
Yeah, even if you put them on.
Do you find this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you put air conditioners that are bothersome noise-wise, very often a magnet will stop the annoyance.
But not just a magnet, a shungite magnet.
Yes, a shungite.
Okay, you know, okay.
Shungite. It's actually S4 magnets. And what actually happens is that you, the shungite magnet itself, you got the magnetic field, you've got the shungite field. The shungite connects to the quantum field. And on top of that, you've got this metal frame of your refrigerator that is attracting argon. And you've got electricity going into that particular cabinet. All of those things combine to create a toroidal field inside the refrigerator that is very similar to what you get in a pyramid.
Very cool. So now, maybe even my food and veggies and stuff are like vibrating at higher frequencies and have more life force energy in them.
Well, not only that, but the toxins will come out of them. Because,
that's so cool.
Yeah, because your food starts tasting better. I actually had, you know what half and half is, it's half cream and half milk.
Yeah.
And I had one of those, I guess it's a quart, it's the taller ones, you know. And it was expired for over 6 months, and it only had, I had kept like an inch of the stuff in the bottom. And after 6 months, you could still smell it. Nothing, no sourness or whatever. And I poured some in some hot coffee to see if it would curdle. Nothing. But after I had guests coming, I had to throw it out. So it could have been still good years later. I don't know. But 6 months after the expiration.
Wow. That's wild.
The first time we noticed this was with an avocado. Somebody had cut an avocado and put it in the refrigerator. And normally they turn brown. But it didn't. And they were astute enough to realize it. Whoa, it didn't turn brown. Why? I got a magnet on it.
Very cool.
Yeah,
well, I'm very happy with the magnet.
Yeah, they're very, very interesting. But
it is.
Now I can't remember where. Oh, yes, okay, I'm back on track. All right, so when we first began to, Walt Silva and I began to work on the shungite, he was already working with argon devices based on spirals of a wire. You know, you make the spirals. And he had been at this for decades, and so he had learned, and they have a chart, and you can take a pendulum, and you can say, okay, and in the case I'm about to tell you, it was turpentine. Because turpentine, Jennifer Daniels, the doctor, she had a very successful practice in New York City, and you might have heard of her, but she was still losing patients doing, you know, medicine. And she went to her predominantly black clientele and said to them, was there anything that your grandmother used to do when you people got sick? You know of any of these things? And oddly enough, many, many people began to say, she'd give us turpentine on sugar cubes.
Wow.
Okay, now so she's going, what is this about? So then she starts to research it and she finds out that in the early pharmaceutical, you know, accepted blessed AMA stuff in the very early days, turpentine was used to cure just a whole slew of different ailments. So
I think turpentine is still in some Edgar Cayce remedies and stuff. I think I remember seeing it listed there. Oops.
Yeah. So what she did, and it's funny, I mean, to hear her tell the story, it's hysterical because she decides that there's enough, you know, verbal information coming in that she wants to actually try this thing. So she said she paid all her bills. She put a note on the refrigerator. She got all prepared in case she killed herself making this human trial thing. But what she did was over a period of days, she increased the dosage of the turpentine. And the first two dosages, and she's using drops on a sugar cube, basically. The first two doses, she didn't really feel. But I think it was the third one, she went, oh, my God, something just shifted in my body. And then she went even further. She took more of it, and then she reached the point that she knew that was she was now becoming poisoned by it. And so she knew the range of when it's therapeutically working and when it's not. When it's dangerous. And she proceeded to treat her patients. And after a year, the hospital she was affiliated with, one of their administrators said, who are you sending your patients to? And she said, I send them to you. And he says, well, but you haven't sent anybody to me in a year. And she says, because I didn't need to.
Hmm.
Well, now she lives in Panama because she's lost her license. I mean, they went after her with everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
however... I was so impressed with the research she had done on the turpentine that I asked Walt, can you take and make me a spiral in the frequency of turpentine? And his spirals are based on orgone and actually pulling orgone in through, the coil of the copper. But now he's working with shungite, which intensifies everything. And so he sends me this turpentine spiral. And after a bit of, I actually worked with it for quite a while, and I was just absolutely amazed with it. And so one day something tweaked me, and I had them send a turpentine spiral to Dolly. And Dolly, are you still with us? I would like you to introduce Mr. Spiral to Deborah. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, sure. Because I have questions about turpentine spiral, because I'm not understanding what that is. Can somebody clarify?
Well, what he does is he uses dowsing, and he's got this chart. It's, you know, I think 2 feet long or something. And he will ask for the frequency of turpentine, and then he gets a number. Then he takes copper piping like you'd see in a refrigerator, you know, the thin, the small stuff, and he cuts it to a length that corresponds to the frequency of turpentine. And then he makes a spiral out of it.
And he cuts it to a length that corresponds to the frequency of turpentine.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means that, the length of the length that the...
So let's say that the turpentine frequency is 50.
Right.
So then how do I cut a piece of pipe that is...
Well, you have to know what the conversion is. I don't know.
Okay.
He does.
Oh, I see.
It's a conversion
thing. Got it.
And I think that they've worked on this for decades. As a matter of fact, I should ask him that. I've never even thought to ask him that question. He just says to me, so then I cut the pipe at the frequency and I accepted that. You're much more into details than I am.
It's so true.
Oh, God. I love you. I can't
you
quite...
love me and I'm going to drive you crazy.
No, I love it. I push, you know. No, so I'm not sure what it is, but that's what it is that the spiral is now in the frequency of turpentine simply because of its length, and that it's pulling orgone through it. And the thing that he made different than Sperling and Don Croft and all the others is that he added shungite. So when he connects both ends of the spiral together, it's going through the shungite field. So the orgone never wears out. It never becomes dead orgone. It just keeps spinning orgone, orgone, orgone. But the orgone is going through a length of copper tubing that is equivalent to the frequency of turpentine.
And is the copper tubing in the shape of a spiral, or what's creating the spiral?
Yeah, he just wraps it. Let me find a...
No, I understand now. So the spiral itself is a physical object that is made out of this copper piping that is at the frequency of turpentine.
Correct.
Got it. There's like a ratio.
Right. So it's homeopathic in its concept, except instead of taking turpentine and putting it in water and then taking 10 drops and putting it in water and, you know, going through all that to get the purity of the frequency.
The succussion.
Exactly. He goes right for the frequency.
Cool.
Okay.
So it's more like Rife. It's more like what Rife was doing.
Oh, it's Rife. It's William Reich. It's Raymond Rife. Everything that he has studied, all these people.
Very cool.
You know, and he's found things that is absolutely not scientifically true. And that was the key to understanding why shungite works with electromagnetic energy. Because the way...
Why would it not be scientifically true?
Well, what do you mean? In this case, when they started out and they were creating the first electric dynamo, magnetic dynamos, you know, you get the spinning thing and you get the magnet and the electric energy coming off it. You're wrapping wire. If they had wrapped the wire in the opposite direction, the signal coming off of it would have been rotating in a way that was biocompatible with our own cells. But instead, they wrapped it the other way, which means that it's rotating contrary to our cells. So when a cell is in the field of an electromagnetic energy, it starts to lose its spin, and finally, it will reverse its spin, and now you're in real trouble. But with the ability to be able to understand that basic problem, okay, we understood what shungite was doing, because shungite's field is so powerful that even an electromagnetic field that comes in and hits it, or a Wi-Fi field, when it hits it, it is the Wi-Fi field can't handle the field of the shungite. And so it reverses. It doesn't change anything on the system. It simply has from an energy level, reversed the field. And that's why shungite is so incredibly amazing when it comes to protecting against anything, because the same concept, a toxic molecule is rotating in a direction that is contrary to human and biological life. When it hits the field of shungite, it instantaneously begins to try to turn to match the shungite field, and it can't because it's a molecule, and it loses molecular cohesion and falls apart in atoms. That's why when they're using shungite instead of carbon in water purification, they never get any toxic buildup. It disappears. Because the toxins. You know how when you've got carbon in a Brita pitcher, and after a while it stinks so bad because it's more polluted than your water could ever be?
Because you have to change them.
It's because you're taking the toxins out of the water. But in the same device, only using shungite instead of carbon, there is no toxic buildup, and yet the water coming through that field is absolutely toxin-free. And that's because it's being broken back down to its atoms.
Mm-hmm.
And just falling apart.
It sounds very scientific to me.
We are very scientific. Yes, we get into the voodoo things of he uses a pendulum, I can actually see the energies, you know, but that's how we got to where we got with the science. You know, I would see an energetic situation occurring and I'd tell Walt, and Walt would figure out how to test to see if I was observing correctly. And then, boom, he did. And now we've got another principle of science we didn't understand before, which we would make a product of.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
But I want you, Dolly, go ahead. Dolly?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you said that last time, but you started talking, so I was waiting. Nancy and Walt and Derek are scientific. Me, I don't know a darn thing about science. I don't care to know it. But I got Mr. Spiral, and I'll tell you about Mr. Turtle in the pool later. I got Mr. Spiral, and Walt had forgotten to turn him off. And so when I got him, I had to put him in the back bedroom because he had too much energy for me. And even when he was in the back bedroom, he was knocking me over with energies. So I was telling Nancy about it. She said, well, turn him off. So I turned him off. And I was able to bring him in my bedroom with me.
Okay, so I need more information here. So you're talking about Mr. Spiral in the swimming pool.
No.
Mr.
Turtle is in the swimming pool.
Okay, sorry.
I'll tell you about him later.
Okay, so where, I'm sorry, then I missed the whole thing. So where was Mr. Spiral?
Nancy had Walt send him to me.
Okay, and this is one of the spirals that was calibrated to arsenic or
turpentine,
I'm
not
sorry,
arsenic.
I'm sorry. I gotta get my poison straight here.
Well, turpentine.
Okay, so it was one of those.
So we're at the place where Mr. Spiral arrived at my house, right?
Okay, got it.
Okay, so because Walt hadn't turned him off before he sent him, I had to put him in the back bedroom because he had too much energies.
And he had too much energy, and you experienced this how? How did you know he had too much energy? What was happening to you?
I had energies all around me, and it made me...
I see. Got it.
I don't know how to explain it scientifically.
No, I just wanted to know what your experience was.
Okay. And so Nancy said, turn him off. I didn't think of turning him off. So I did. I turned him off.
And how did you do that?
I just said, turn off.
Intention. Okay, intention.
There you go.
And so I brought him in the bedroom, and I talked to him before I turned him on. I said, Mr. Spiral, I don't know if you can hear me, but you need to turn on slowly, and we can rev up to where you're in tune with my body, and we can work well together. So I said, okay, Mr. Spiral, turn on slowly. And so we did, and we kept upping it until he and I are at the same place now, energy-wise. Well, he's a little above me, because I can say to him, Mr. Spiral, will you please go to the source of the discomfort or pain that I'm feeling at this moment in time in my chest, and make it stop by healing it whatever way you need to. And even before I get the words out, Mr. Spiral's busy doing his thing. And I feel comfort. And I don't feel the pain. And last night, I think it was last night, my wrist was hurting really bad from where the doctor had cut it open. And Nancy said, well, did you talk to Mr. Spiral? Duh. He's only laying right beside me. I mean, sitting right beside me on the nightstand. And so before I got the words out, Mr. Spiral made it so I was no longer in any pain there. That's how he and I worked together.
Nice.
And I wanted to... Oh, I'd have to tell you after break about this next thing. I'll tell you about Mr. Turtle real quick. Mr. Turtle is a shungite thing, and I don't know what's in it. Walt knows all the scientific stuff. Nancy might know. And so I get Mr. Turtle, who is a black round circle with a rectangular base on him. And I put him in the pool. Ever since I put him in the pool, we haven't needed chemicals. Once in a while, he'll throw some chlorine in because he feels better about it. The pool boy. The pool boy will throw the chlorine in the pool, so the pool boy...
They can charge you more.
And, well, we pay $100 flat a month for pool service every week. We really haven't needed the chemicals since Mr. Turtle arrived. And Mr. Turtle has a very big personality.
Mm-hmm.
He can connect to me wherever I am, as Mr. Spiral can. Like when I was in the hospital just the other day, Mr. Spiral connected to me, and then Mr. Turtle connected to me. And then when we come back from break, I can tell you what happened.
I can't wait.
Well, I'll put on the break song early. It's 4:20, Carly Simon.
I thought it was time. I'm sorry.
No. It's almost there. We can do it. We're flexible. All right. So we'll be back in 4:20, and funny.
Take a look around now. Change the direction. Adjust the tuning. Try a new translation. Don't look at your man in the same old way. Take a new picture. Just because you don't see shooting stars doesn't mean it isn't perfect. Can't you see? It's the stars. So what's this about your best friend? She's got a brand new shiny boy, and they're moving out to Malibu to play with all his pretty toys. And you feel closed in by the same four walls, the same old conversation, with the same old guy you've known for years. Use your imagination and you will see.
Welcome back to the Say What Show. It's October 19th, 2019. My name is Nancy Hopkins. With me is Dolly Howard and our guest, Dr. Deborah Green. And Dolly is telling a story. Dolly?
Okay, so I'm trying to do it fast so you guys have more time to talk.
We like stories.
Okay.
She'll be back.
Okay. So I got to back up a little bit so I can fill in the background for the rest of what I'm going to tell you. Derek and Maureen are married, and they're a couple who works with Nancy in the Shungite story. And Derek is like Walt, very scientific-minded, and he makes all sorts of things. But Derek also has a spiritual side. So he's like me in that part. And one day, and Dave Corso, have you ever heard of Dave Corso?
I have not.
Okay. Dave Corso created the radio station WSR.
Wolf Spirit.
Wolf Spirit Radio. And so, of course, I got close with him years. I've known him years. Via the radio, via the internet, by talking with him, on the phone and on privately on the internet and in our chat. Anyway, I got to know Dave Corso. So when he crossed over, he came to me as well as others, and he would talk with me, and he ended up giving me some messages to pass on to everybody who listens, and so he stayed close to me. He still comes and sees me, and then he and Derek got to know each other. Derek is on this side, Dave's on the other side. Well, one day I was having a very difficult time. I have severe heart disease, so, and they didn't, the doctor said, go out, do what you want to do, eat steak and ice cream every night if you want, have a good life. So I did, of course. So, which my kids are having fits over, but, one day I was having a really, really bad time health-wise. Nancy and I happened to be on the phone together, and so unbeknownst to me, Nancy called Derek and said to Derek, please go look at Dolly. Not physically, etherically. And so Dave was here too. And so Dave and Derek were here together, and they were working on me, and they kept me here for longer. Energetically. That's why I'm telling you this story. It's all energetically. And then I got Mr. Turtle first and got introduced or got to know him. And he was... I told him, look, Mr. Turtle, if you, he's Shungite and other things. If you want to go join the Shungite grid with your energies, please feel free to do it, because I know you can be anywhere you want to be at all times. So he got all excited. He went and joined the Shungite grid, and then they made other little grids. And so he's very happy turtle in my pool. And we get along fabulously. And Mr. Spiral, too. So I ended up in the hospital Wednesday. I went to regular's doctor's appointment. And
3 days ago Wednesday?
Yes. And so my poor cardio guy, he's been wanting me to let him do a cath on me, a heart cath on me, for a few years now, because we just moved over here a few years ago, got and went to him. I kept saying no because of the other two cath experiences. First one ended up in 5 bypass surgery, and I had an NDE. Second one, I had an asshole doctor, but a very good physician, he was, treat me, and I had NDE on that one. And the cath ended up where he built me a main left artery and put stents in, and the, couldn't do the back of the heart because the back of the heart refused him. And but anyway, that guy came in my room the next day and was yelling at me, you kept dying on me, I couldn't finish the back of your heart. And I, excuse me, doc, I didn't mean to inconvenience you. So that's why I would not go and approve another cath.
Right.
Because every time I do a heart cath, I end up in trouble.
So, you end up dying.
Yeah. But it's not a bad thing. I mean, they really had to convince me to come back here. But anyway, that's what would happen. And I wasn't, I didn't think I was ready to go yet. I didn't feel I was ready to go yet, but I was afraid to give the opportunity. So I would say, no, you can't do it. Well, okay, so I was feeling really bad Wednesday when I was in to see him on a regular visit. And he talked me into going to the ER and letting them admit me, because his office is on the same floor I got admitted to in the hospital. So I went, I got admitted. Nanette and I finally got a minute to ourselves, and she talked to me, convinced me if I let him do this and it's not my time, God doesn't take me then, because everybody knows I'm ready any second. But if God decides, no, not time, then I will come back to her and the kids, because I was concerned over her and the kids, my two other kids. And so I finally said yes. Well, she told the nurse literally ran to the desk, which was just outside my room. They put me right outside the nurse's desk. And she called the doctor. The doctor came to the room right away. He came in the room. He looked like he was going to do a jig. He was so excited. His face was all lit up. His aura was beautiful and excited. And he looked at me and said, "We're going to do it." I said, "Yes, we're going to do it. But you got to promise me that I won't be in any pain." Because in the other one where I kept dying on the doctor, he hadn't given me anything other than the numbing part in my groin. So I went through 3 hours and dying and coming back with nothing to calm my nerves. Mm. So the doctor promised, "Oh, you're not going to feel anything. You're going to be fine. You'll be in the twilight. You'll be..." So, all right, I agreed. So I went in it.
Does that mean that he was going to put you under anesthesia?
No, just the twilight. He said, "You'll be 90% out of it.
I see.
10% there." That I could react to their commands.
I didn't even know they could do that.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. So I'm going to make this short because I did a DS Dolly Shares on it in detail, and people can hear the detail in Dolly Shares. So I get into the cath lab itself, and there's this guy who's bouncing all over the place. I mean, this dude, he wasn't even touching the ground. He's a little guy, and Russell's age, exactly Russell's age. And he came over. He says, "My name's Dave. I'm going to be keeping you comfortable." And he put my arms down on the things. They put them down, and I lifted my one arm, and he grabbed it and yelled at me, "Don't move your arm! Don't move!" So immediately I froze. I said, "Okay, if you put it that way, I won't move an eyebrow." And he said, "I'll do your scratching. If you get an itch, I'll scratch it." So he went flying over to this other place and was doing something. And I said, "David, my back has itches." He said, "Dolly, don't even do that. I don't have time to scratch your back." And so I decided he was on invisible roller skates because he didn't touch the ground, but he's all over the place. Flip, flip, flip here, flip there. In my face with his face. "How you doing?" I just found out today I have to share this. I have to share this with everybody. Y'all, he was my hospital angel from the 5 bypass surgery. He was the angel that was there and talked to me and told me the things I do and that I wouldn't remember it, and I've been doing all these years. I had prayed Thursday night, because I had a respite Thursday, they had to get my body prepared for this procedure. So I just mostly rested during the day, as much as you can rest in the hospital, with them coming in and adjusting the heparin dose and all, taking your blood, all that stuff. So I had prayed, "Please, God, let me have an angel this time that I can see in the room with me." Because last time I did get to see my guardian angel, but that was when I was out of my body, and I wanted to stay in my body this time. So anyway, I just found out today when I was typing up the Dolly Shares, they were telling me, "Dolly, don't you realize what you're saying about David? He didn't touch the floor. He was all over the place, buzzing around. He was in your face, talking to you. Don't you realize who that was?" I got goosebumps again. He must be here again. No, there's Dave too. And so I was told David was the angel, my hospital angel from 2003. And he was in flesh. God answered my prayer again. But the energies that I received, now this is going back to Derek and Dave and Nancy, and all the prayers I've received from my special guys, they know who they are, and from my special peoples in the chat rooms, the listeners who hear me and pray for me, all those prayers, dear Dave, Nancy, I can't think of everybody, my kids, of course, all the energies have made my heart strong. The arteries going to my heart are shit, but one of them, that's one of the stents, is completely 100% blocked again. The others are getting there. But the doctor was standing telling us after the surgery, Annette and I, he looked at me and he shook his head and kind of put it down. He said, I don't know why you're still here. And then he lifted his head real quick and he says, I know why. It's your heart. You've got a strong heart. I don't know where the strong heart came from, when you got it, how you got it, but your heart is what is keeping you alive because it's so strong. And I was so moved emotionally, knowing all those energies I just told you where they came from have worked together to make my heart stronger than the dark, than the doc ever realized it could happen. And those were all energies. What you have been talking about, energies.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to share this with you, to let you know I experience energies 24/7. And some of these energies are miraculous, at least to me. And I wanted to share that with you because you work with energies.
What a great story. Yeah.
I think I'm done now.
Well, glad you're here.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Deborah.
Well, the guy she was talking about, in actually it was a character that showed up in her hospital room and had a conversation with her. And then he just poofed and disappeared.
You mean back in, what, 2013, was it?
2003, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, 2003. All right.
Yeah. He came in my room. My Sherry was leaving, my youngest daughter. She had left. And I heard this noise over by the door, and I thought, oh, what'd you forget, Sherry? And I looked, and it was this short, balding, older gentleman. He came over. He says, hi, Dolly. I said, oh, hi. And we started chit-chatting. I got the goosebumps. The hairs are standing up again. And I realized, and I said, you're an angel, aren't you? He said, yes, God said you'd realize that. And I was so excited. And so he told me all the messages that he had to tell me and told me, you won't remember these. Some of them you might remember after they happen. But these are the things that you need to do, how you need to react, yada, yada, yada. So then he said, I have to leave now. Well, of course I got upset. I got too many questions. And so anyway, I said, can I shake your hand, please, before you leave? So we shook hands. One, two, three. Poof! He went into a mist, floated up by the ceiling, floated out to the door, out the door, and then I'm trying to get out of bed with all these IVs and tubes in me and all that stuff just so I can see what room he was going to next. But nurse came in and stopped me. So that's who I call my angel nurse, and there he was as David for me on Friday. Oh, on Thursday. Whichever day.
Wow, what a cool story. And so you're like fresh out of the hospital here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I got to spend the night in my bed. I was so excited. My own bed, yes.
So, Deborah, what does the scientist in you say about what she just told you?
Oh, it makes perfect sense to me, and there's actually a lot of research done to back up experiences like that. I mean, the Parapsychology Association, for example, is a really amazing association of researchers doing very, very meticulous, rigorous research on near-death experiences, on out-of-body experiences, on, you know, people who see, you know, whatever you want to call them, entities, ghosts, apparitions, whatever. And really, really documenting and studying these things, because many, many people have these types of experiences. And so, you know, I'm just all about, you know, wanting to study them and understand them, you know, better. And, you know, distance healing, like all that stuff. There's really a lot of research to back up, you know, these phenomena right now. And I love that. I love it when spirit and science merge, you know, that's something that really just,
Well, this will thrill you, because unless you probably already know it, in Australia, they're actually integrating Reiki into the school systems.
That is very cool.
You know, I mean, that was astounding to me. And it's not just one school. It's a whole, you know, bunch of these schools. So it's mm-hmm. actually being accepted by the establishment type of stuff. So much of this.
Finally, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you one of the most thrilling experiences that I had, and you know, maybe this makes sense, maybe it doesn't, but I mean, these, you know, Reiki and yoga and meditation and, you know, all these things, these are energy based modalities, and for so long there's been such closure and resistance to these things, but it's starting to change a lot, actually. And it was probably about, I don't know now, maybe 5 or 7 years ago. Time is such an interesting thing. But I remember walking into the Walmart here on Maui Island, and I saw yoga mats for sale in Walmart. And I was ecstatic. Because it means if they're selling yoga mats in Walmart, that yoga has become so mainstream that, like, everybody is doing it. And, you know, when people do yoga, they encounter their own energies. I mean, you know, yoga is very much about the inner experience. And, like, how cool is that? You know, how exciting is that? And then usually at the end of a yoga practice, you know, they do the Shavasana. And, you know, so it's a time, it's a way of sort of introducing people to meditation. And anyway, I was just absolutely thrilled by that happening. Because it means, okay, things are really changing. People are waking up. People are becoming much more open to you know, the fact that we are energy. That's what we are. And understanding those dimensions and understanding, you know, what resides on those dimensions with us and is with us all the time, whether we're awake to it or not. You know, and everybody can wake up to these things if they want to. We all have that capacity. We do, you know.
Do you find that the Hawaiian people are and have been a heck of a lot more open to the spiritual side of life than what people on mainland are or do?
Much more awake and aware to the energetic aspect of life. Yes. You know, I try to avoid using the word spiritual, because for many people, if you say the word spiritual, they automatically think about religion. And, you know, what I'm talking about when I talk about energies and, you know, this type of phenomena, it has nothing to do with religion at all. And so I really try to make a distinction there in how I talk about things. But yes, the Hawaiians, you know, the Hawaiians who are in touch with their culture, you know, with their traditional practices and so forth are very awake and aware to these things. Yeah, it's part of their culture very much so, and it's a very everything is alive for them, when you start to understand and again look at things from the perspective of energy, where everything is energy, then we do come to realize that everything is alive, and so then it's not sort of this kind of far-fetched weird thing. It's like, yeah, everything is alive, and because everything is energy, and those energies take different forms and shapes and find their essence in all kinds of things, but that's really where the action is.
Here's an esoteric thought for you. Are they actually alive, or do they become alive when they interact with human intuition and intention and thought?
I believe that they are always alive. We are just not aware of it. But when we become open and aware of it, then there's a kind of synergy. I mean, have you ever had that experience where I just had this recently, okay? So somebody sent me an email. This was an introduction by email, and so this guy named Michael, who lives in New Zealand, is coming to Maui. And he says, I'm going to be up in Kula 200. He says that in his email. I've lived on Maui for 21 years. I have never heard of Kula 200 before. So I'm like, oh, gee, I wonder what that is. I don't know, whatever. I go to the farmer's market this morning and I'm having a conversation with one of the vendors. And he says, oh, yeah, I live in Kula 200. I've never heard this in 21 years. I get it in an email. I hear it from this guy. And then I'm driving back from the market and my passenger in the car says, oh, there's Kula 200 and there's a sign, right? So it's like, I'm sure we've all had that experience, right? Where you've never heard of a word or a concept or whatever, and you hear about it and then all of a sudden you see it everywhere, right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay, thank you. So to me, it's similar to what you were just asking, Nancy. It's like, was Kula 200 not there? Did it not exist until I received the email? Of course it did. but now that it's in my sphere of consciousness, it becomes enlivened, or like there's this sort of synergetic relationship now with me and Kula 200. And so it starts popping up, and you know what I mean? Does that help you understand my answer to that question?
Well, I understand perfectly.
the reason I asked you the question was because of the conversation regarding Mr. Spiral and the turpentine spiral. I mean, I talked to mine too. Talks back.
Yep.
One day, one of the kittens was not doing well, and so I said, and I actually had something that I had. The turpentine spiral working on me, and I said, can you do me a favor and check in on the kitten? And then I said, oh, well, you're working on me, and I get back, and this is stuff, it's real when it surprises you,
true.
And I hear this voice say, what, you think I can't do two things at once? And of course the kitten and I were both fine. I wonder about, because we talk about the sentience of shungite, and yes, I've worked with minerals and plants. I mean, that there is a sentience there. There is spirit there, because why wouldn't there be? Who are we to limit the ability of God to experience existence? God wants to be a rock. Well, it's still God.
Exactly. And that reminds me of, I don't know if you guys have heard about, what's happening in Hawaii right now with the island of Hawaii.
No.
Where they, and so they, so they want, this is a story, okay? So they want to So there's a mountain on the Big Island. We call it the Big Island, but when I say the Big Island, I'm referring to the island of Hawaii. And why they named the state of Hawaii, you know, Hawaii, and then there's an island of Hawaii, it makes it very confusing. But at any rate, we have this island named Hawaii. Those of us who live in the state of Hawaii refer to it as the Big Island, which is not Honolulu, okay? That's a different island. That is the island of Oahu. People often confuse that as well. So I'm talking about the Big Island of Hawaii, and the island is so big that all of the other islands can fit inside of it. It's our biggest island here. And on the island of Hawaii, there is a mountain called Mauna Kea, and that mountain has a lot of significance for the Hawaiians, and it is a sacred mountain, and it's, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, it just means that the Hawaiians have a history of being in communication with that mountain, and, you know, just like you guys are talking about, and the mountain has a relationship, a very, you know, powerful relationship with the Hawaiian people throughout history. And at the moment, there are 13 telescopes up there. And several of these, you know, massive observatories were built without permits. And the permits were issued after the fact. And now they want to build yet another telescope. This one, 18 stories, massive, huge thing. And, you know, the Hawaiians are not wanting this. And so there's a group that has occupied a road, an access road up on Mauna Kea. And they first gathered there, 30 of them, in July. And they've now been there for over 100 days. And they started with 30 people, and sometimes there has been as many as 3,000 people up there. And there's a community created up there now. And, you know, they have a, you know, a medical clinic up there. They have a university up there now. They have, you know, a kitchen where they feed everybody every day. And this is a lava field. There is nothing up there. There's no plumbing. There's no electricity. There's no nothing. And so, you know, these people who have been up there for over 100 days now, they are living on a lava field at approximately 7,000 feet altitude. And I went up there last month to teach at the university, to teach about 5G, actually, Nancy. And it's very, very, very harsh environment. I mean, you know, you've got the thin air, you know, and you're closer to the sun. And so you're either like scorching during the day or else you're freezing at night. You know, it gets down like into the 30s and there's constant wind. And I completely fried my face, including my lips. And I don't know if it was the wind or the sun or whatever, but it was just like really intense. But, you know, when I'm telling you this story, because this is something that's happening in Hawaii right now. And in my opinion, you know, just being up there, like this is a turning point in the history of Hawaii. Like those people, they are not going away. They will not allow that telescope to be built. There's so much power and energy behind their presence there. And everything up there is kapu aloha. Everything up there is about honoring aloha and honoring that mountain, honoring that being of Mauna Kea. And it was such just an incredible, deeply profound experience to be up there with these people and to witness what they're doing, all in honor of protecting that sacred mountain.
Those are special people, you know.
Yes, they are. They certainly are. And many of them are elderly. And, you know, they're the kupuna. They are the elders. And for them to be up there for all these days, just living in this such a harsh environment is just very, very inspirational. And the other thing that was so inspirational is that people come from all over the world to go up there and to offer gifts, you know, to this community, to these kupuna, and to honor them for what they're doing. And this is a very important historic time that's happening in the state of Hawaii right now. And to me, it's the turning of the tide. There is no going back. You know, they will not build that telescope. It's just not going to happen. It's very empowering, you know, for the Hawaiian people to be so united around this, given the history of this place. Anyway, I'm sorry if I diverged.
No, it was so excellent. But Dolly, have you heard of any of this?
No.
And I have heard none of this. And, okay, the two of us, she watches more television, I mean, news stuff than I do. But we, you know, you'd think you'd see it on Facebook or something.
Yeah.
I have seen
you. You would think that you would see it, because the other thing that happened is that the governor of Hawaii at one point released the National Guard against these people and arrested the elders. And you know, and when they arrested the elders, I'm telling you, that's when he realized that there's really something happening here, because everybody went up in arms. I mean, everybody was just like, you have crossed a line. You know, you don't arrest the elders. That just is not done. And, you know, it's a very controversial, contested issue here, because a lot of people are pressuring the governor. He, by the way, withdrew the National Guard. And when I was up there, there was very little police presence, you know, on the Mauna itself, on that area. There were police, you know, in other areas on the road, you know, issuing people speeding tickets like crazy, you know, setting up speed traps and stuff. But in the area where their community is, there was very little police presence there. And, but there's so many people that are pressuring the governor to, you know, just send in the National Guard, arrest them, you know, get them out of the way. We're losing millions of dollars on the delay of the building of this microscope. And it's robbing the world of, you know, studying the secrets of the cosmos, because Mauna Kea is the ideal location on the planet for these types of telescopes, because when you're up there, I mean, I remember just being there at night and looking at the sky, freezing to death, by the way, but looking at the sky and just like, oh my God, I totally understand why they want to build another telescope here. The sky is so close and there's no light, like there's no light pollution, because we're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, right? The most remote island chain on the planet. And so you just feel the closeness and everything just seems so visible, all of the stars, everything. And, you know, so there's a lot of pressure to build this thing and to advance, you know, astronomy. And why are you holding up science? And because they're blocking the road, you know, there's also some, you know, work on the telescopes that already exist up there that can't really be done. Some of it can be, but some of it can't be. And then they're like, oh, you're robbing all of these researchers of the secrets of the cosmos and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal what's going on.
So, Nancy, I have Dave.
You have Dave? Does he have a message?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Dave is saying this is part of the awakening. And this is a good proof to us here that it's not that people are awaking all over the world. You know how you got messed up on the show tonight. He said that was on purpose so that you remembered Deborah. Because they brought Deborah in to share this specific story to prove to us people really are awakening now. And the elders are showing the youngers what's important. And it's encouragement to us who are here and aware and alert. Hey, people, we got to wake up, that kind of thing. So, Dave, silly. Stop. He said, well, I didn't want to have to slap your face to get you to wake up. What I was trying to tell you. He's been here all the time, and he's been trying to tell me this all since we started the show. And he says, I'm seeing it. I get to see it. All these angels, like a choir full of angels, but a humongous choir is put together, and they're happy, they're rejoicing, they're singing, they're playing their instruments. They're making a joyful noise unto the Lord, like the Bible says. And he said, that's because people really are starting to wake up. And I got to stop fussing so much over it because things are happening that we can't see yet. Some things we can, but most things we can't see yet. And please have the faith and keep the faith and continue on and get stronger as we go, knowing there's those guys over there working on it as well as beings here. And the alien beings. And the alien beings? He says, yes, Dolly, you know they're there. Okay. And the alien beings, too. Per Dave. And the others. My posse.
Thank you, Dave. Sorry we weren't more receptive to you being here.
Yes. Thank you, Dave.
I don't want him hitting me in the back of the head. He's done it a number of times.
Well, he said he did hit you in the back of the head, and you ignored him.
I get a lot of hits in the back of the head.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you, yes. It was Falcon Britt on the 5G radio. She was talking about the indigenous people, I believe in Ecuador, who took to the streets to stop a movement of taking over Ecuador by the IMF giving them a loan. You know that how that works. You know, they give you a loan and then you can't pay it back and you owe them everything. Yeah. But it was the indigenous people that stopped it. So, a story that I heard from, one person, this stuff should be all over the map, but no. And that's why I think they're rushing 5G. Because they know that people are waking up. And they're trying to get it online in time to stop the majority of them.
Yeah, I have to tell you, if there's another moment, I'll share a tiny little story about just that.
Go for it.
Yeah.
So do you guys know about Fairfield, Iowa? Fairfield, Iowa is a tiny, tiny little community of people who either live or work at Maharishi Mahesh University.
I didn't know.
Yeah. And these people are very aware, right? Maharishi Mahesh University is the place where they actually did, I'm kind of diverting here, but I can't help it.
It's okay. We do it all the time. Yes.
So they did this research where they did this research where they sent people to crime-ridden areas, and they would meditate at those places, and then they would watch crime rates, and they were able to influence crime rates in very dramatic ways. If memory serves, one of the places they went to was Washington, D.C., and they were able to reduce the crime rate by 40%. And they also were able to turn off violence in other areas like a light switch, just you know, with this meditation. So anyway, Maharishi Mahesh University is a very cool place. But it's a small, you know, it's out in the middle of nowhere in the cornfields of Iowa. And they have for a couple of years now been fighting smart meters, because they don't want smart meters there, because smart meters are, you know, they communicate with wireless radiation and they're a massive health hazard. And they also have surveillance aspects to them where, you know, they can spy on you inside your home by tracking at very minute levels all of your electrical use, blah, blah, blah. And I'm in touch with somebody who lives in Fairfield, because I've been working with her on the smart meter thing, because I worked on the smart meter issue here on Maui and have kept smart meters away for the most part. And she just called me like right before our show here. And she said, you know, so Deborah, I've been, you know, really, you know, focalizing the efforts to stop these smart meters here for 2 years now, night and day, working so hard. And by the way, they have not been successful. And she said, and now they just told us that they're going to be deploying 5G. And when I heard that, it was like, and she confirmed this. I said, you know, to me, that just sounds like a vindictive move. It just sounds like, okay, you're opposing smart meters. We're installing them anyway. And, oh, by the way, now you're going to get 5G. I mean, for them to install 5G in Fairfield, Iowa is just like unbelievable. It's like WTF. It just makes me so mad. It's just pure insanity. Anyway, I just had to tell you that. And, you know, please send love and support and positive energy to Fairfield, Iowa, because they're just getting pummeled there. And, you know, they're trying to do everything right. They're working with their local officials. They're doing, you know, working with utility company. They're trying to do everything they can, and they're just getting, you know, nowhere. So, and now this, right? So anyway, let's please hold them in the light, because this is not a good thing.
Okay, my recommendation is that we actually focus on the people that are in the dark, the ones that are doing this, the ones that aren't aware, and yeah, just think of them waking up.
Okay.
You know, because the key to trying to stop all of this is to wake the people up that are there inside the system itself. About 3-4 weeks ago now, Australia, the largest telecommunications company there, went out and said, we're stopping the deployment of 5G.
You know, that was largely because of Ray Broomhall.
Well, yes, I can argue that it was Ray that was making it cost a lot of money to even try this. But what impressed me, Deborah, was the fact that one of the reporters asked the operations officer, the guy that was making this announcement, he was saying, well, where are these people getting this ridiculous information, you know, this irrational information? And he said, I don't think it's irrational. And that to me was a really, really important statement, that they weren't, okay, yes, maybe they got there because of what Ray was doing, making it cost so much for them to do it. But
how was Ray making it cost much? I'm not following that.
Oh, because he's basically bringing lawsuits against the telecommunications companies and taking down cell towers, all 1,000 of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but the lawsuits aren't monetary, as far as I know, and it doesn't involve going to court. It's really about criminal assault. But anyway, it's just, again, details, doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, he's been very successful at it. And in fact, it is on assault, but it's not criminal. It's still in the civil courts. We were corrected by somebody who seems to be an associate of his. It's an interesting kind of thing.
Yes, it is. It's his protocol is very amazing.
But my point here is that the telecommunications companies, the guy representing them, the biggest one, acknowledged the health concerns. And that's what I think is the quickest way to making the change, is to use our intentions to see these people waking up to the truth. Because the truth is overwhelming.
Yeah.
And if we can do that, then you're inside the system, and people like the CEO the operations officer, you know, can now say, maybe there is something to these health concerns. You know, maybe we should use a precautionary procedure.
Principle,
thank you.
Yeah.
You know, so because... these guys are, I believe in humanity, and I don't believe that the people that are doing a lot of this are actually realizing the full implications of what they're doing, because they've been so brainwashed by the system that they work for.
Yeah, I agree.
So my feeling...
I totally agree.
Yeah. My feeling is if we focus our energy on waking those people up, you know, like Dolly says, throw a blanket of love on them. Well, let's throw a blanket of love that has, you know, a download of reality, the real reality. 5G is out to kill you.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Love,
wake up.
Love and intelligence, or love and awareness.
Knowledge, yeah.
Yeah. Or even openness, you know. Sometimes, you know, I mean, I'm with you, Nancy. I believe that these people are good at heart, but they just live in such bubbles. You know, they're so isolated that they don't know the truth. You know, they're protected from it. They've protected themselves from it.
And they have too much to lose by believing us.
Correct.
You know, and these people have got to get a grip on themselves, get the courage to be able to say, wait a minute here. I cannot continue with this, because they know the truth. Some of them don't know the truth, but there's an awful lot of them that know the truth, but know that their livelihood, their family are in jeopardy. And yet we have to give them the courage to stand up as a human being for your big family, humanity.
Yeah.
I think this is the lesson, you know, that we come together. That we come together and we do what we need to do to survive. Because 5G, I mean, when I first started talking about it and was saying the same things I'm saying now, people really, I mean, I had this one guy, he says, I followed you for a long time. When you came out with this weaponization of 5G, he said, I just absolutely thought you were a dipshit, crazy person. He said, and now I believe you. You know, because I was.
Well,
only...
I used to think you were the crazy Shungite lady.
I know.
It's a compliment.
Well, I'd rather be crazy than normal.
But I learned to love her and appreciate her.
It's been a funny ride. So, Deborah, anything else that you feel Dave might want you to say?
Well, yeah, and thank you, Dave. I mean, I'm going to just circle back to Mauna Kea and invite, you know, everyone, all the listeners and, you know, Dolly and Nancy to look into this issue. And because you can get information on it. I mean, it's oftentimes in the state of Hawaii, you know, what happens here gets ignored. And there are people who don't even realize that Hawaii is part of the U.S., you know, and, you know, oftentimes if you get news or whatever and there's a map, the map will be, you know, missing Hawaii, like it's not even part of the map of the U.S. But we are, in fact, part of the United States.
That's the way Michigan is. They're UP.
Yeah, that's funny.
People don't know it's there.
And you know, if you're not, you know, getting this news, please look for it. If you Google Hawaii Mauna Kea, M-A-U-N-A, Mauna, and then the second word is Kea, K-E-A, or Mauna Kea protectors, and something like that, you can learn more about it. And they're always in need of supplies up there, right? Because nothing is there. Everything has to be brought in. It's a lava field. And so, you know, they're completely dependent on food donations and water donations and support for the porta potties that are up there, and, you know, clothing, because winter, we do actually have winter here, believe it or not. Might sound kind of funny, winter in Hawaii, but up there at that altitude, it gets really cold. And so, you know, clothing, stuff like that. So check it out. And thank you for allowing me to share that.
If you will
okay,
give
I'm
me
being shown.
Go ahead.
Dave, just a minute. Nancy's talking.
What? No, please go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. We can go ahead. He wants me to, and the posse want me to share with you. They are showing me. I love how I'm able to see things lately. I don't know what's going on. Okay. So anyway, they're showing me the mountain and they're showing me winding paths and winding roads going up, and they are going to be getting some help. And they're showing me it's highlighted, the whole area. Oh, I got such goosebumps. I can hardly talk and my hairs are standing up. The whole mountain sky around it is all lit up, and it's got so many angels there that they're bumping into each other. And they're singing there. They're singing and they're playing their instruments and they're rejoicing and they're praising the elders. Mm. Oh, I wish you guys could hear this.
Mm.
Don't make me cry, Dave.
I know. When I was up there, I was in tears a lot of the time. It's just such an incredible experience.
He said they're filled with so much love in that area right now. They just, that they hope if you go back up there again, you will talk to as many of the elders as you can and reaffirm to them they are loved. They are surrounded by good energies.
It's palpable when you're up there. You can totally feel that.
I can feel it right now. Yeah. I can feel it, yes. They want them to know. Go ahead.
I want to point out that particular latitude in the structure of the sphere of Earth is one of the most powerful places. You find it in any rotating body, that area at 90 degrees, north or south, in any rotating celestial body, it's power vortexes. So they've got a geological surface to stand on that's just radiating energy anyway. Okay,
it's
sorry.
It's true, and if you measure Mauna Kea from the ocean floor to up to its peak, it's the tallest mountain in the world.
Wow. Did you want to say something else, Dolly, Dave?
Oh, I'm so overwhelmed because I'm seeing it and I'm there.
Yeah, they threw you into a spontaneous remote.
Oh, my gosh. I just want to cry.
Yeah. It's just like that, Dolly. It totally is. And I'm getting teary right now. It's just bringing it, yeah.
Well, listen, give us every good link you have regarding this story, and I'll put it in the, you know, underneath the YouTube video so that people can just click on it. And,
okay.
And we'll see what happens.
Yep.
But
just if you go there again, Deborah, please share it with them.
Okay. Yeah, and I know people who go, you know, who are going to be going, and anybody who wants to go, they welcome people to come and visit and and, you know, just, yeah, have it's that important. Experience.
It's important who shares it with them, takes their hand, like they're going to shake it, but take it in both their hands, look them in the eyes, and tell them they are loved. They are surrounded by, I don't know if they would believe in angels, but
of course,
exceedingly good energies. They are not alone. They will never be alone.
That's and all part of their culture.
They will be given the help that they need. In their eyes, look in their eyes and hold their hand in both hands.
Well, in Deborah's case, maybe we can have her with a bag of shungite and she can hang out, you know, hand out shungite to all these people.
Oh, yeah.
Because it does purify water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, and it energizes you. I mean, yeah, let's put a little shungite on that mountain. Hey, we've blown through the 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
I just got to thank you so much, both of you. I mean, it's been fun and very informative. And Deborah, seriously, anytime you want to come back, we are absolutely thrilled to have you.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it very much. I really appreciate this.
Are you coming back?
Were we too far out for you?
No.
Oh, good.
Okay, everybody. Thanks for being here. Dolly, you want to say goodnight?
Okay, thank you all. You know I love you all. Love you, Nancy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, both of you, and the listeners.
Say What? Say What Radio Show. With no agenda, it's always a surprise. But if we're not having fun, we're doing something wrong. What?